It is 8%.
What?
This beer is 8%.
Well, that's it for Vero.
Welcome back, everyone, and thank you for joining us. This is Radioactive Spider Pod, a podcast that looks back on the 90s animated Spider-Man cartoon and asks, isn't there some kind of trademark on lightsabers? I'm your host for the day, the peacekeeping Peter Iskandar, and I'm joined as always by my unstoppable vampire slayers, the vehement Vero Taylor.
I will defend to the death my love of Digimon.
And the mythical Kevin McAvoy.
I will defend to my death my hatred of Digimon.
All right. You can't take my thing. It's my thing.
He took the opposite of your thing. It's called debate, Vero.
Are you pro or against Digimon? Go.
I'm pro cutting this part out. Let's go.
Before we get into it, check out our social media for screenshots, updates, and all that good stuff. We're at RA Spider Pod on Twitter, at Radioactive Spider Pod on Facebook and Instagram, and all our links are available on our website, radioactivespiderpod.com. Also, if you want to help us out even more, think about supporting us on Patreon. You'll get access to exclusive content and some other fun surprises. Check us out at patreon.com/radioactivespiderpod. All right, has everyone come prepared with something that's totally not a big glass of plasma?
Yeah, I got myself a nice Heist Sour Pale Ale.
I'm starting with a passion fruit flavored alcoholic sparkling water.
And I'm drinking Omnipolo Zodiac. It's a cool can with a black top.
Well, we're going to hit the black top running here because our thirsts have been temporarily sated and it's time to hop on our choppers and raise the stakes because we're headed into the night after Neogenic Nightmare Chapter 9, Blade the Vampire Hunter. Blade the Vampire Hunter first aired November 18th of 1995. It is based on... I'm not really sure. But I am sure it's time for Peter's Comic Book Minute.
Peter's Comic Book Minute. So yeah, this episode isn't based off any specific issue of Spider-Man or any comic book, really. But it does include Blade, so I checked out what Blade's first appearance was. It was in Tomb of Dracula, number 10, from 1973. And he was created by Marv Wolfman and Gene Colan. In that comic, Blade just like shows up on the pier as a couple's trying to leave to get married in America. I don't know, they're attacked by three vampires and then Blade kills them. And then we're taken to a party where on a boat where Dracula is the special guest and he tells people there's nothing to be afraid of, seduces a woman, tries to enslave all the partygoers, then Blade shows up and kicks his ass. He ends up just flying away into the night, leaving his servant Graves, the guy's name was Graves, on the boat, and the boat explodes. There's nothing about Blade's backstory or anything. He just kind of comes in there and kicks some ass.
That's not bad.
I wish this is what this episode was like.
Yeah, I think it's going to pale in comparison. But our story begins with Spider-Man on his way to see Doc Connors to get a more permanent solution to his mutation problem. And a lone biker reads the tabloids. Spider-Man catches up to Morbius up to his old tricks, murdering the innocent. And we're treated to a very one-sided fight as a freshly fed vampire lays a beating on Spider-Man.
Oh my god, it starts with another 2-minute recap. I'm very drained from this story. Fucking end already.
Yeah, this Morbius business is just the worst.
I think the recap was only a minute, isn't it? And then the theme song is a minute.
Yeah, but it's still like a 2-minute intro is super long, especially for a kid. I'm surprised how I can't get through it now.
Tug's collar of podcast. No.
Listen.
Oh,
back in my day, kids watched recaps. Unlike you podcasting kids, skipping all the time.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess back in the day, you weren't chain watching this shit. It was week to week at best.
Yeah, that's fair. Week
memories
to week,
are fading.
It does wear on you. I'm pretty much done with this Morbius story, and I do not think it's nearly over yet. So
it's just so one note.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I like Blade's sick intro beat.
And his sweet motorcycle.
Yeah, his sick motorcycle with his custom license plate, BLD-20.
Is that Blood?
I thought it was Blade.
Oh, shit. So he's reading again a newspaper article written by Ned Leed.
Well, it's supposed to be Ned Leeds, but...
Yeah.
And the headline is just, Is Spider-Man a vampire? I don't know, Ned Leed. Is it?
This is top level reporting.
But then it also goes and says, like, copyright 1996 and, like, J3 Enterprises. Like, they put some detail into this one.
It's some of the least amount of errors we've seen in a headline, which is pretty good.
Oh, but there will be plenty later.
When it cuts to Blade, aside from his weird theme and him reading the newspaper, it kind of glosses over the kind of setup of his bike. So you kind of see what he's dealing with there. And they reuse the shot several times in the episode, so every time I noticed it, that he's stationary and the speedometer reads about 14 miles an hour. I'm like, maybe you need to get that checked out, buddy.
He did. There is no stop.
That's because I never stop hunting vampires.
I'm always on the go. I like that apparently everyone's taken on the trend of the bandana with the dangly bits that the Punisher brought to the fashion stage last week, because our jogger repping that bandana.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Morbius is hiding in the bushes, whining pitifully. That's his new I'm an alpha hunter strategy.
Help me.
Yeah.
And then when the guy tries to help him, this lone jogger with a cool bandana, he jumps him. Like, cool, buddy. You must feel good about yourself.
Seriously.
So I guess he's dead and loving it now, like Peter said last week. Where did this change happen?
We'll get into it, I guess. It's when he just woke up in the morning, or the evening, I suppose, as it is. Morbius and Spider-Man's fight here is pretty much similar to every other fight they have. They kind of throw each other, or one throws the other.
Back to bear hugging.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although, Morbius does whip Spider-Man into a tree, and it's right up there with that AC unit Hydro Man thing that happened in terms of stuff that looks like it hurt. Like, he gets fucking trashed here.
But then Morbius comes back and, like, out of nowhere just fucking tanks, like, Spider-Man in the back.
And then Morbius throws Spider-Man up four stories onto the roof in one throw.
Well, he just fed, so I guess that makes him real strong. That's the logic they're working with here.
Spider-Man goes and mentions that Morbius has to stop it with its bloodlust. Doesn't he mean plasma lust? Like, aren't they, like, kind of staying away the fact that he's, like, exsanguinating people?
Plasma is just, like, an element of blood.
Mm-hmm.
The rooftop tussle is then cut short when a mysterious biker ninja that sometimes has fangs shows up and tries to kill Morbius. Spider-Man intervenes to save his classmate from garlic gas, and of course, Morbius flies off. Spider-Man questions this new vigilante, but gets nothing but another beating, and as the ninja drives off, he doesn't notice that Spider-Man adds a little tracer to his bike.
So deadlifting really is the show's go-to move.
Yeah, you pick a man up, and you whip him as far as you can, often into something, and that's how fighting works.
Did Semper Senpai watch a lot of WWE as a child?
Who didn't, Vero? I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm expecting one of them to do a Valvita suck it or something. Like, it's gonna happen.
Morbius is actually really fucking giving it to Spider-Man this time. He's, like, disappearing and then coming back and, like, attacking Spider-Man when he doesn't fucking see it. It's probably his best performance.
Where did the flying blood bank go to?
Again, a reference to blood.
This vigilante, who obviously his name is Blade because that's the name of the episode, is played by J.D. Hall, and he's a journeyman actor of sorts. This is, like, the second credit that gets mentioned on his Wikipedia page, so that tells you about how prolific he was. The only thing that really stuck out from me when I deep dove through his IMDb is that he was the pool hustler on that one episode of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air where Will loses all his money and the car to a hustler at a pool hall. Yeah, that's all I got.
How about $100 a ball?
Yeah, and then fucking Uncle Phil comes up and he's a fucking hustles the hustler. So good.
Bust out Lucille.
Yeah. He's got his own thing.
$100 a ball?
$100 a ball?
That's right, Uncle Phil.
Jeffrey?
Break out, Lucille.
Gosh! It was a great episode. Love that episode.
I love Uncle Phil.
Rip. No. Rip Uncle Phil.
Blade has this helmet and then I assume it's because it's a kid's show. You got to show a person wearing a helmet riding a motorcycle.
Of course.
Oh, that makes sense.
Man, does he look like a fucking dork. They try and jazz it up, give it like a tinted visor or whatever. Yeah. It's not working for me here. In fact, a couple later on in the episode, he's just whipping it off as quickly as possible.
He doesn't have to wear the suit.
As soon as he's not on the motorcycle, it's off.
But his motorcycle's always going 14 miles per hour. He should be wearing it.
Yeah.
Hey, that's pretty fast, Vero. That's like 25 kilometers per hour.
His motorcycle can climb buildings.
Yeah, it gets those ridiculous spike tires that he can push a button. Like, it's pure cartoon logic, which I kind of enjoy. Like, it's pretty fun.
Yeah.
And then when Morbius just bails on this, because that's what he does. He just flies away. He's chasing him up the side of the building, like Vera said, and Morbius is climbing the building instead of just flying off into three-dimensional space like he can do.
Yeah, what the hell was that? Just goes straight
up. He's committed to this bit.
But then he has to go and worry about the icing problem.
How'd you solve the icing problem?
Icing problem.
Might want to look into it.
So fucking Blade whips out a laser sword.
Yeah. Legally distinct from any kind of light type saber.
It's like a scimitar too. It's like curved.
Yeah, it's so weird. It doesn't make him any more intimidating.
It makes him significantly less intimidating because you're unsure about what its capabilities are. I guess it's the sword equivalent of a laser gun.
Yeah.
Well, it immediately slices through concrete, so we know it doesn't fuck around.
Well, you know, George Lucas is going to sue somebody. Is it like toss Spider-Man around day?
Yeah, probably.
Because everyone is tossing Spider-Man around.
This might be one of the things that bothers me most about this episode. Spoiler alert, I don't fucking really like it very much, but it reminded me a little bit of Hobgoblin episode where Spider-Man just comes off as so inept all the time. Like, he gets just bitched around so much that it... You feel like, I don't know, it just feels, the whole thing feels impotent.
Oh.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Man, the animation as Blade drives off is just whiplash inducing. I watched it, I hated it, and I went back and rewatched it a couple times during my first viewing of the episode. And after Spider-Man is thrown into the wall, his escape takes 16 seconds. And during those 16 seconds, there are 17 cuts.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah, it's literally like shot of him revving, shot of his foot moving, shot of the motorcycle going around a corner, shot of the motorcycle making a jump, shot of the motorcycle making a different jump. It's just so weird. And I guess they were doing it because they could piece it together and then reuse a bunch of those shots, which they do.
That rev shot comes back a lot.
It's so jarring. Yeah, he revs. That rev shot's used twice and it's only 5 minutes into the episode and 3 minutes of actual airtime.
I wonder why they're so obsessed with the motorcycle.
I think kids think motorcycles are cool.
It's a pretty sick motorcycle.
Yeah, I will defend the motorcycle. It's pretty cool.
Blade's outfit made me think he looked like Ghost Rider.
Yeah, it's a bit similar. Yeah, I can see that. And the spikes on the...
With the spikes on the shoulder? Like, yeah. I guess because you can't have two dusters. Blade's a duster man. Through and through.
That's just Wesley Snipes. That's his normal clothes.
I think he had a duster in the comics. I saw it. I looked at some photos.
Yeah. No, he definitely does have a duster in the comics. Not like, but and Morbius has that weird skin tight kind of leotard thing that he wears, which is really funny though. Just to mention that in the comic, he goes in with this like normal clothes, and the experiment that changes Morbius changes his clothes into that.
That's amazing.
One thing I did like, though, is that Blade does not give a fuck.
You cannot be a vampire.
Why?
Because you're still alive.
Hey, slow down.
I have no quarrel with you.
Maybe I've got a few questions.
Spider-Man isn't a vampire. All right, well, see you later. And then Spider-Man, like, persists.
Yeah.
And then gets netted.
Everyone's like, pay attention to me.
Don't let this distract you from the fact that in 1996... Morbius threw Spider-Man off Hell in a Cell.
Nice.
16 stories through an announcement table. We spent some quality time with John Beard and the exposition news team, which gets us up to speed. Morbius still officially missing. Nobody knows what's up with Spider-Man. Peter Parker couldn't think of a good excuse, but that's okay. Flash Thompson's still in the hospital. Deborah Whitman unwittingly describes Morbius the vampire to the world's best police sketch artist. And Spider-Man gets bathed in a healthy green glow of the Nalgene Reinvigorator, courtesy of Dr. Connors.
I love that headshot of Morbius. It's like a casting call. You know he spent his money trying to become famous.
No, I just see him watching this on TV, like at a storefront, and like, how did they get my glamour shots? Oh, because it's got this soft pink background. Like,
that's the last time I go to Sears.
Yeah, I paid so much money for those.
Damn you, Sears.
I should have asked for the private collection. So Peter shows up and he's on the news and it's like, oh.
Well, I was tracking Spider-Man and I wasn't able to call home. I'm sorry for all the trouble I caused.
And then Aunt May is just like, oh, well, thankfully you're just home. I would be fucking pissed. Like, you did what? You couldn't go and find a payphone? Like, fuck you, buddy.
I just wish he'd give up this dangerous work.
Then we go into the sketch artist, who again is a fucking pro.
Is it the same one from the Man Spider episode?
Well, it must be. They had the same style.
Yeah, his art style is pretty similar.
But so Deborah Whitman's there.
Looking stacked in a green dress, by the way. Just got to pop that one in there because I've chirped her before. Hey, Deborah, it's working for you, bud. Good job.
Deborah, keep whatever's happening going.
I'm a married man, but I can look.
That's true, but also women love being called bud.
I'm just distancing myself emotionally.
I've been hurt before.
She's got a bench you could do science off of.
Nice, actually. That was a good one. Yeah.
She goes and describes that he has fangs. And just like when Peter went and described what Dr. Octopus looked like to the FBI, they're just like, fangs? She's like, you fucking listen.
She shuts it right down.
He had fangs.
Fangs?
I'm perfectly serious.
But also, the guy's already drawn like a man mid-flight with a turned-up nose, a weird vampire goatee, and he stops at fangs and is like, nah, nah, man.
They really didn't say who he was drawing, though.
Exactly. That's why I thought it was going to be the man spider. Can we talk about what Lieutenant Terry Lee says about what Spider-Man needs?
Yeah, she is not very professional here in general when talking to those reporters, who are also not terribly professional.
What about this rumor that Spider-Man's turned into a monster, huh?
All I can say is we're determined to bring him in for questioning.
And then she's with the sketch artist. She takes a look at it and she drops the shittiest little one-liner.
Yeah.
A vampire? Great. I need this like Spider-Man needs vitamins.
I had to listen to it a second time to understand what it was she said and how, I guess because he's very healthy.
He's very strong.
No, yeah, exactly. I agree. It didn't make any sense. It was just like, it was the same kind of thing. Just like, does the lion hunt without his mane?
Does the lion hunt without his mane?
The last scene here, which I guess is not on the news, is Spider-Man getting his treatment from Doc Connors. And it's kind of creepy because you actually see him starting to regrow the arms again. And Dr. Connors is so blasé. He's like, yeah, yeah, I got it. It's cool.
The mutation.
Just a few seconds.
Or he's just jealous.
I thought the serum cured him, right? But now he's like constantly on the brink?
The very first thing he says in this episode is that it didn't cure him. And cut it in.
Dr. Crawford reversed my mutation, but she didn't cure me.
Yeah, it turns out. I think it probably breaks down over time, like whatever it is. Maybe it's some sort of suppressant. Maybe it's some sort of blocking agent that breaks down and then... Surprise, arms
yeah,
again.
Doc Connors kind of gives you a very brief explanation, but the point is to make him dependent on the machine. Like, he needs these treatments daily in order to not transform again.
When Connors talks about how the higher-ups are getting nervous about neogenics because of the Herbert Landon situation, and I thought they were going to flash cut to a mob with a sign that said, like, no more muties.
Well, at least they're actually thinking about it now. Like I think I mentioned it like last episode, where it's like, why isn't this thing on their fucking lock and key?
I know a really good security guard that recently just lost his job.
Talk to me, Leewald.
Intruder, sir. Area 3.
Hey, Leewald was a consummate professional.
And now he needs to go and use the Neo Morpheus Rematrixator to stay well for the rest of his fucking life.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I love his calisthenics that he pulls when it's like to reinforce that he's healthy. Yeah. He's just like, ooh, ah, yeah.
He just drops, does some fucking light yoga there. It's good to stay fit. Sitting is the number one killer in America. Spider-Man once again goes looking for Morbius, catching him fresh off draining yet another undergrad. Chalk-faced foe
has decided to embrace his emo afterlife and tries to feed on Spidey. The motorcycler returns, identifying himself as Blade, and nearly kills Morbius before throwing Spider-Man from the roof.
I will say that Spider-Man gets his revenge from getting thrown into the tree slash thrown up four stories when he just 2-foot crushes Morbius to the ground.
Yeah, but it looks like he can't decide if he wants to embrace him or teabag him, so he does both. He gives him the chest squat, and then he just leans on him.
Oh, yeah.
Just hovers slightly. Fucking just
take that plasma from my balls.
That's where it's stored, in the balls.
I can tell you a serious source of plasma right now.
Oh, man. So Morbius just whips him through the concrete wall there. I guess that now that whole thing about him kind of being a conflicted character and being torn between his bloodlust and his conscience, we're just going to get rid of that and he's evil now.
I like this life now. I cannot be hurt, cannot be destroyed. I am immortal.
All they needed was one line of him being like, you know, like, you tried to stop me, this new guy tried to stop me, and I'm invincible. You know what? This is what I need to be. Like, there's literally no throwaway line to justify all of a sudden him being like, you know what? F being the good guy, I'm ready to rock.
I would have liked to see him use his power to accomplish something that fed into his original goal.
Yeah.
In a way that he wouldn't have been able to accomplish that thing if he was not a vampire.
So do science during the night while everyone's asleep.
Yeah, unfortunately, they didn't really set it up that way. But if he'd had some kind of a thing like, oh, he gets a breakthrough or he's able to do stuff, like maybe he just like goes and steals a bunch of money and he's able to get like build a new lab.
So a bit like a Doc Ock.
Something like that would have been fun. Like any kind of a motivation. I suppose, other than power corrupting, absolutely.
Out of left field?
Well, I mean, he is the king of the night, so.
I have no desire to be turned back into a pitiful human. Now I am so much more than human. I am the king of the night!
Yeah. Okay, buddy.
So Blade shows up, and Morbius is, all of a sudden, turns his attention to him, and he throws something at Blade. I think it's a barrel. And Blade takes out his sword, and the way he swings it, makes it look like the sword is floppy.
Sorry, takes a second sometimes. He's like rubbing it.
He just gives it a couple shakes or two to just really bring out its power.
Don't look. He like pops a pill under his tongue. He actually saves Spider-Man here because like Morbius grabs him, rips off part of his costume and starts to drain his plasma. Spider-Man does a pretty good no here.
No!
Not as good as his no when he grew four extra arms, but pretty good.
I wonder if it's because he can feel the mouths on his arm and he's like super creeped out.
Spider-Man kind of gets tossed by Blade because, you know, you always are tossing people around here.
Yeah, it's a bunch of tossers.
So he throws the guy who he's seen swing through the city through by webs off of a roof. That's his plan to kill him. And then when he shoots a web, he cuts it. And so Spider-Man just doesn't bother to try again. He just falls.
Oh no, he probably won't get out of there alive. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Well, Spider-Man nearly eats it, but he is, of course, saved by a luckily placed awning. And then he shrugs off his not very adoring public and decides to hunt the hunter using that spider tracer that they actually placed earlier.
I liked that they used the 3D map of him falling. I think it was one of the one times I was like, this is sick.
Are you sure the best time wasn't when Aunt May walked up those stairs?
I mean, sorry, you're right. The runner-up to best time of the 3D use is
Thank
him falling.
You. Okay. All right. I'll allow that. Man, the idiots that he meets on the street here.
Oh my God.
Like, fucking New Yorkers.
Oh, it's Spider-Man. He looks sick.
Don't touch him. He might have spider cooties.
Like, what is that woman's voice?
She's been smoking a little bit too much.
Well, like in that guy, that one guy, he was like, hey, this autograph will be worth money if you fucking ride the lightning.
Can I have your autograph? If you get the chair, it'll be worth a fortune.
I had to listen to that again because I was absolutely floored that they would bring up execution on a fucking kids TV show, but they can't say the word blood.
Yep.
They can imply that Spider-Man is going to be charged with like capital murder and sentenced to death, and he's going to get executed, but they're like, can't give Morbius fangs.
Yep. Can't give Blade a sword. Can't say kill. We have to say destroy. But yeah, electric chair is fine.
So I actually looked into this, and I was pretty curious of like whether or not the death penalty was even legal in New York.
No.
It is not now. New York stopped the death penalty in 2007.
So it definitely was legal.
So at the time, this was accurate that they would give people the chair.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I was actually pretty surprised. I thought it was a while ago, but...
Why would they write that line in? I'm still, like, actually floored about this.
But then also that same guy is just, like, fame. Always goes to their heads. Who the fuck is this guy?
He's up there with Cecily. I wish they had named him so we could put him in the hate pile. Cecily?
Cecil.
Yeah.
Fame. It always goes to the heads.
This episode's so weird because the relationship between Blade and Spider-Man starts hostile, stays hostile, but Spider-Man's always acting like it's not. He gets up into the rooftops and he's like,
hard to admit, but I can't do this alone. I need help. But can I trust a vampire hunter to help me?
Can I trust the guy who just tried to kill me? Yeah, I probably should. No, you shouldn't fucking trust this guy. You don't know anything about him.
Maybe he's tired of being the alpha. Maybe he wants to take a back seat. Who knows?
Is Spider-Man the alpha, though?
Hey, he took over the fucking Blackbird, so he's at least a little alpha.
Well, he BDE'd all over Cyclops.
Not hard to do. Spider-Man shows up at Blade's lair. After the usual inept scuffling, he managed to get some backstory from Whistler, Blade's mentor. It turns out Blade is a half-vampire, and together, the two hunt down Nosferatu, which is what has brought them to New York, presumably. So Blade's lair, I guess, is a random back room in a theater?
That's playing Dracula?
That only plays Dracula?
It's a Terence Fisher film.
Yeah, that's twice as many R's and infinitely more F's than it should have.
Yeah, 100%.
But they know how to draw E's. Like, why? I don't know.
Yeah, it's supposed to be Terence Fisher, T-R-E-N-C-E, and it's T-F-R-R-E-N-C-E. And which is shitty because that's a good movie. The 1958 version of Dracula.
Oh, it was an actual movie?
Oh, God, yeah. That's like one of the definitive versions. It's like... It's got it's got Peter Cushing. It's got Peter Cushing as Van Helsing, and then it's got Christopher Lee plays Count Dracula.
Yeah, no, he's amazing. RIP Christopher Lee.
Christopher Lee.
Yeah, I know, right?
And Peter Cushing, really.
Yeah, I miss them both.
I think this is the second guy that we meet that has a guy in the chair.
Well, he's not in a chair yet, he's just got a cane.
Oh, gosh.
I gotta get back to what makes us great, making fun of the disabled.
We haven't seen Smythe in so long.
I know, I miss Smythe and Kingpin, guys.
When was the last time we even saw him? I can't fucking remember.
Beginning of the season, I guess.
Honestly, this is what this series of episodes is missing, is fucking the Kingpin and Smythe. That's why I'm so upset.
You're wrong, Vero.
Blade's mentor Whistler is here, and he is voiced by the legendary actor Malcolm McDowell.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I know. I was like, that sounds like somebody doing a Malcolm McDowell. And then I looked it up. I'm like, holy shit, it's really him. He's been in Clockwork Orange and like, fuck it, you look it up. He's a legit star. His inclusion here seems as good as time as any to kind of throw the supposed story behind this episode. So I did my research. And apparently Semper Senpai really wanted Blade in the show because he wanted an African-American superhero. Because he is himself African-American.
Yep.
So he wrote the script to this, like the first draft or whatever, gave it to Avi Arad, the producer, who then gave it to David S. Goyer.
Yep.
Who was the person who wrote the movie adaptation of Blade, which came out 2 years later, but obviously was in pre-production at the time. And Goyer had made up the character of Whistler. And so when Semper heard about it, he then went back and added him to the script. So it's kind of a...
Oh,
cool.
You know, something he added a little bit later. It wasn't in the first draft, which is why it's a little bit jarring. And Goyer, by the way, pretty much does exclusively comic book movies, and he has a spectrum of quality.
He did Batman Begins and The Dark Knight.
And also he did like Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice and Man of Steel, which were kind of trash. And then he did all three Blade movies, which I kind of like the first Blade. I wish that's more of what we got in this.
He directed Blade Trinity.
Blade Trinity was an iPod commercial. I said it.
She's making playlists. She likes to listen to MP3s when she hunts. Darkcore, trip hop, whatever kids are listening to these days.
They slow down and bullet time her putting on her headphones.
Yeah, but then he also calls that other girl Thundercunt. So either way, Kris Kristofferson will always be my Whistler.
He is really good.
Yeah, me and my Bobby McGee and Blade. Oh, man. At least we get a good quip here from Spider-Man.
All the attacks have occurred near Empire State University. Why, Whistler?
Well, maybe he just likes the cafeteria food.
You!
Because cafeteria food, classic joke.
We had cafeterias.
Yeah, that'll learn you. The fight here between Spider-Man and Blade is really forgettable, except for the fact that he webs up Blade. Blade cuts himself free from the webbing with a blade. Like, I guess he can have a knife. I thought the whole reason he had this lightsaber thing was because, you know, it wouldn't allow him to have a sword, but...
Well, it was like what I was mentioning in the last episode with the Punisher. Why the fuck doesn't Punisher have like a blade on him? Because he usually does. And now Blade has a blade.
I'm convinced it's toys now. Like, I feel like it's not censorship. I think it's just selling cool toy accessories.
So Whistler says a pretty good line here.
Many things are possible. As much as we have learned, Blade, we are still charting a course through darkness.
I think I'm going to write a song called that. And it's just going to be like, charting course through darkness.
It's all the same.
Whistler also does a good job of basically just belittling Blade and just putting him in his place. Like, no, Blade, go work on your toys while the adults are talking.
Continue refitting the weapons on your motorcycle. Now go, go.
As you request, Whistler.
Spider-Man makes a funny quip.
We have worked by ourselves for a long time.
Well, work? What is it you do? Are you garlic wholesalers?
I love that. I love it because he's very clear what they are, but he's being sarcastic.
So Whistler goes and mentions that they go and hunt Nosferatu. So Spider-Man goes and makes a quip saying, isn't that a German rock band? And I looked it up. It's actually an English rock band.
Oh, there you go.
Like, it's like... It's a second wave gothic rock band.
We should splice in a riff of theirs at this moment.
I'll think about it.
Nosferatu.
No? Okay.
But then they go into Blade's backstory.
Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
This is, it's pretty extensive with all this backstory.
It's interesting that for a character that's, like, that will be in two episodes based on the ending of this episode, spoiler. And that the Punisher was also in two episodes, that the Punisher's backstory was literally like a sentence and a half, and yet Blade gets a bloody paragraph with a flashback.
And a fully animated retelling.
And like all Whistler had to say was like, oh yeah, his dad was a vampire, his mom was normal, and his mom was turned against her will, so she gave him up for adoption.
For me, that speaks to the thing I was saying earlier about it being slightly personal for Semper Senpai wanting this character to be in the show. He likes the character. He shows it some love.
Like, I'm not mad at it. Blade also comes back in later episodes.
So why'd they have to go and make Blade's dad look like the fucking weirdest, creepy old guy?
Because he's a Creole.
Oh.
You just conceived. I guarantee.
Like, long white hair and a weird dust. He's obsessed with those dusters.
Fucking like, it's like Gambit's uncle.
No, he looked like Blackout. He totally fucking looks like Blackout.
I kind of wish that, especially because it is going to be a two-parter with Blade, I wish they had teased out this backstory a little bit more slowly. You don't need all of it right now. You know, you could give the first, like, you give part of it now. The part that makes it relevant that he, you know, explain his powers, explain his motivations. And then the next episode, you could do the other half a little bit more in depth later. Although when they do go into Blade's backstory here, they show him being bullied as a kid. And It's a really weird animation choice. There's one of the kids slash hobos that's bullying him is wearing Peter's classic green, white, and whatever shirt.
Yeah. Peter's shirt makes a cameo.
It's so distinctive.
Well, he found it in the park.
No, but it's years ago, so it doesn't make sense. Yeah. Like, is this related somehow? Like, what is this choice?
Oh, guys. Instead of making the shirt white, green, blue, let's make the shirt green, white, blue.
They actually reuse the same scream sound effect twice in about, 2 minutes? During the brief shot that they show of the Dracula movie, there's a lady screaming.
I failed. You must be calm.
And then at the end of this recap, you got a very quick shot of a vampire-esque woman screaming.
And then Blade's deadpan face when he throws the bomb and just, like, keeps staring and doesn't blink. Like, it's a really creepy sequence.
I'm sure they thought they were going to cut away sooner than they did.
It was like they left the camera on too long and they're like, we're coming back to you.
Spider-Man finally gets a word in edgewise, and he explains that he wants to save Morbius with the NGRC, but Blade is focused on destroying it, so he attacks Spider-Man again. And Spider-Man, after pretending to have left, hears that Blade is dealing with some uncomfortable changes of his own, and also manages to steal some of his gear on the way out the door.
Spider-Man does the most obnoxious thing in this scene. He decides to, for no reason, jump from like the left wall to the right wall. Just stay where you are. You already do this weird thing where you insist on talking to people at an elevated angle. Why make it worse? The man's got a cane. He's now got to move around. Like, come on.
I guess to him, it's just like going and waving your hands while you're talking at this point.
That's how he gets animated. He jumps from like wall to wall.
I question Spider-Man's thought process here. He doesn't get the idea that maybe this guy who's been trying to kill you, tried to kill you like 4 times, I think, already so far this episode.
Yep.
That maybe telling him that you have a machine that created a vampire, knowing how he feels about that sort of thing. Maybe don't tell him that. Maybe just shut your big mouth.
He's the result of an experiment with a machine called the Neogenic Recombinator.
A machine that can create vampires?
Yeah, that's all that Blade heard.
I have to destroy it!
Whoa, wait a minute, Fangface.
Vampire is my trigger word!
Yeah, exactly.
All right, I think I'm nailing this Blade impression. Am I nailing this Blade impression?
It's pretty good.
I don't know.
Who?
I like that Whistler brings up that, you know, his serum is losing its effectiveness.
You know that as you age, you're becoming more vampire-like. You crave plasma.
The serum you give me makes those cravings go away.
Yes, but it's losing its effectiveness.
And maybe he needs a bigger dose, or, you know, he's getting older, things aren't working as well.
Yeah, they cram in a little bit even more backstory into these last few seconds that they're on screen. Like, oh, you've got this whole thing about your powers and that stuff. He's like,
I must remain a vampire so that I can locate my mother, and I'll destroy anything that gets in my way.
It was similar to what happened in the Blade movies, right? Wasn't he trying to go and find his mother?
Well, she was turned into a vampire, and he was, the whole thing in the Blade movies, I think, was like he was trying to save his mother, but then she had gone full vampire and she didn't want to be saved.
Yes. Who does that?
I mean, pretty much everybody, I guess.
Yeah.
Once you pop, you just can't stop. But Whistler drops even one more for our collection, because we learn about Blade's lust for revenge.
Then you must learn how to act out of what is right, not to satisfy your uncontrollable lust for revenge.
Revenge?
Revenge.
Revenge?
Revenge.
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 Peter uses science to study Blade's anti-vampire technology, but gets a call from Mary Jane, who invites him out. They go to a police briefing at ESU about the mysterious goings-on conducted by good old Lieutenant Terry Lee. This mostly consists of her yelling at Peter and making wild accusations until people leave. Outside, Peter comforts a distraught Felicia Hardy and is watched by a jealous Michael Morbius, who plans to make him pay, and a jealous Mary Jane,
who makes some spiked dinner plans with Harry Osborn.
So Peter is sciencing and looks at Blade's gas, and he determines that
it's not a simple piece of garlic that Blade uses. It's combined with rare bacteria.
And it cuts off really briefly, but to give context to people as to why this is interesting.
Uh-oh.
Here we go. Vera's Microbiology Minute.
Vera's Microbiome Minute.
Thank you, Peter. Obviously,
not everything has to have the exact same tune, you bastards.
So basically, once bacteria that can infect humans or other mammals or vertebrates, once they infect them, they actually produce proteins which sequester or suck up iron in the host. And that's a way for them to survive because in the humans, you actually metabolize iron. And so previously, Whistler describes that vampirism is actually a mutation.
Vampires' bodies burn iron too quickly. They need to steal plasma to get it.
Well, that sounds like Morbius.
So effectively, it would make sense that this gas is deadly to vampires, because if the bacteria suck up iron, vampires would be iron-starved and die.
Huh.
Knowledge bomb.
Yeah. I mean, I fell asleep halfway through, but I caught the gist of it.
So Peter is interrupted in his nerding out, as maybe we should have done to Vera there, by Aunt May, who tells him that MJ is on the phone. From her perspective, his response is to silently stand there and then make a fist.
It's like Arthur. Like,
I told you not to interrupt my sciencing.
We can hear his thoughts, and I guess it makes sense in context, but like for her, it's just him sitting there going, and then she responds,
young love.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. Like, she did not read that situation whatsoever.
If she read situations well, he would not be able to be Spider-Man properly.
Yeah, it's true. So Lieutenant Terry Lee gives a emergency briefing about the vampire attacks to everyone, a.k.a. five characters, all of which we've seen before.
Yeah, I paused it. There are eight people in total who showed up. Dr. Connors is there, even though it's ostensibly for students. He's in the front row grinning like an idiot. You've also got Felicia, MJ, Harry, Deborah Whitman, and then two random people and Peter Parker. That's who shows. Everybody else is out of plasma. Like, they're all dead.
I'd like to see them pan out to like a football game where literally ESU fields like three players.
They're all subs and they just get crushed.
Yeah.
Terry Lee decides to go bad cop by herself here. Just be a huge jerk to everyone in the audience who actually showed up voluntarily with no evidence. Like, what did she expect was going to happen here? Like, if she just berates them, they'll crack and solve all of her problems? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
The first time I heard this, I was like, what the fuck's her beef with Peter? And then in theory, I was like, you know what, if I was a police officer and I was looking at the fact that, like, vampire aside or vampirism aside, I think Peter would be the number one suspect.
You seem to be benefiting all around.
That's not true.
Michael Morbius was his number one competition, arguably, in the Connors competition. Right. He did date Felicia Hardy, yep, who's now single because her boyfriend's missing. Yep. He has no valid alibi as to why he disappeared for those hours and was chasing a mutated Spider-Man. Like, honestly, I give Lieutenant Terry Lee a break on this. At first, I was like, what the fuck's her beef? But now it kind of makes sense. Like, he's the thread that she talks about.
Spider-Man. Morbius' disappearance, the plasma disease, this vampire story, I just know they're linked. But I can't find a thread that connects them all together.
I'm not necessarily questioning her hunch. What I'm questioning is her tactics, because time and again, we've praised her for being a good cop. Like, she uses her smarts in order to try and solve crime. Here, she's just like, I'll just yell.
Well, maybe she's at her wit's end, man. All these kids are missing and she's fucking losing it.
But I don't like that. I like her being competent.
But I do like the fact that she brought her own thread to make a point.
Exactly. Like, what the fuck is that?
She BYO'd her own.
Like, she goes and says,
but I can't find a thread that connects them all together.
And then I'm just like, did she bring that?
Or she pick it off of herself? Like, she's ruined a shirt just for the bit?
You know, in my opinion, Him and Felicia were never an item.
They had a very highly publicized kiss.
It was all over the tabloids. I guess maybe because she might have been on the force during the Doc Ock kidnapping, because he was, like, picking her up.
Fucking Peter Parker knows his rights, though.
Yep.
Yeah.
Felicia, wait!
I'm not finished with you!
Well, then book me or let me go, but I don't have to listen to this.
Fine. You can go. Just remember, I'm watching you.
Damn.
He fucking, like, BDEs that all day.
Yeah, he's not taking that. That's pretty fun.
Because he sees Felicia run away upset, and then he decides that this is the time to be the man instead of, like, maybe hanging out with the girl he's currently dating. But anyways, that's not going to bite him in the ass.
I mean, I hate his choices here. Like, that's some basic shit, man. You get the lady to come with you to comfort that other world. That's what shows, like, oh.
You're still my number one. Good point.
Yeah, it's not a threat to you, but I am a friend of hers. So, like, can you help? Because, like, you know, you're a lady. Maybe you guys can be friends too or something. You know what I mean? It was really stupid, but overshadowed by that fact that Felicia says Peter the way that Aunt May says Peter.
Oh, Peter.
Peter.
I feel like I'm being talked to by my mother over here.
Yeah, you're in trouble. Every time we say that, you're just like, oh, God, no. Also, super dangerous to run outside in the dark by yourself. That's literally the point of the meeting that we're having right now.
She could be preyed upon.
She's just like leaning against a tree. And then Peter comes in and she goes and says that missing Michael is tearing her apart. I'm just like, oh, you're tearing me apart, Morbius.
Tommy Wiseau is smiling.
It's really just kind of feeding into the theory that this is actually Tommy Wiseau's origin story. And he saw this few episodes and just like, I'm going to stick with this Michael Morbius guy.
These are the only episodes that he got in whatever country he's actually from in Eastern Europe. And he was just like, this is how Americans talk, I think. Very good.
Exactly.
The way that he does the read of,
it was my blood that turned him into a vampire,
is so jarring, too.
I know.
Like, he's just thinking it and he just like stares into space all creepily.
Oh, excuse me. While he's super embracing his ex-girlfriend.
Not girlfriend.
Sorry, ex-item, to quote Lieutenant Terry Lee. What was he think was going to happen? This reminded me of the episode with Craven where Felicia hugs him and he's like, no touching. No, MJ, do you see this? No touching.
Oh, man. MJ's like leaning against the wall, just glowering about this whole thing. Harry Osborn pops outside, asks her if she's okay, and she, you know, does the, all right, how about you take me to dinner thing? And his reaction shot,
I'd love to,
is this slow motion, like, facial expression. That's a man who just came in a pair of $700 jeans. Like,
his pair of Zuko pants.
Holy shit. He just goes through a range of emotions.
It's like Milhouse is at the Simpsons place.
Do you know how to cook dinner?
Do I?
He just starts going and pushing.
Do you know how to cook dinner?
I'd love to.
Oh, man.
Boom.
Actually, it's not even the only weird, super creepy facial expression that goes on in the scene, because we cap it off with Terry Lee staring at Peter and Felicia as Peter just walks her to her car, which is a reasonable thing to do. And she's just like sideways looking at it, unblinking, writing on a notepad without looking at the notepad. It's a terrifying little thing to do.
I expected her to start like trailing off and start writing into space, because it was that clear like cartoon bit where they're like, oh.
Morbius breaks into ESU and steals the Neogenic Recombinator. Oh no, I didn't think of a name for it. Before he can fly off, Blade shows up and tries to give him a tan with his headlights, but the villainous vamp is fed too well and gets the better of him, nearly throwing him down a smokestack. Spider-Man swings in to save him, but is unable to stop Morbius from getting away.
So clearly the budget increase that ESU got is not enough to pay for Leewald, because this wouldn't have happened on his watch.
Talk to me, Leewald.
Like, and it's just the most pathetic stealing scene ever. He just walks up to the keypad, is like, nah, floats in, rips it off its holding arm, and just floats out. See ya.
Man. The fucking Recombinator He's got to be the most resilient machine in the entire world. So first, Morbius crashes into it a couple episodes ago. Then it's exploded in the clock tower. As we recall, that entire tower was blown up. Then Man-Spider manhandles it.
Oh, I forgot about that, yeah.
For no reason.
Yeah.
Then, in this episode, Morbius rips it off of the socket.
It's power generator.
Which is, I guess, fine. Yeah. And then he throws it at Blade later on here.
He throws it at Blade.
He drops it.
As a weapon.
And then he picks it back up and throws it at Blade so hard it knocks him over with his superhuman strength.
It's ridiculous.
He's just like, you know what? Here, you want it so bad? Take it. And just hucks it out.
Yeah, but like, it's no good to you if it's broken. And I feel like this delicate, expensive piece of scientific machinery isn't made for these things.
Yeah, and they don't make more than one when they're doing this scientific research and shit.
If a certain centrifuge is more than like one mig off, it's game over.
I can't believe that it's got shock absorbers. Like, this is the 90s. Like, my Panasonic CD player had only 30 seconds of anti-skip. Like, it's shock absorbers.
So the fact that this thing can go flying and still emit what we can assume is some sort of light or laser is ridiculous.
So Blade goes and shines his motorcycle sunlight simulator headlights onto Morbius. Shouldn't that have transformed him back into Michael Morbius?
Yeah, that's a good point. It should have put him to sleep, I guess, right?
Obviously, it hurt him, but
yeah.
Shouldn't it have done something more? Like, what is it that transforms him?
That's a good point, because regular vampires probably be destroyed by sunlight, mm-hmm. but Michael Morbius is just turned back into a normie.
Yeah, so that's what should have happened.
It should have just made him nice and sleepy.
Which also goes and begs the question, he got his powers from quote-unquote vampire bats. Do vampire bats hate garlic and sunlight?
I guess they didn't feel like describing to a kid's show the difference between like an artificially made vampire and a natural vampire, so they kind of just grouped it all together. Morbius does have a throwaway line where he goes,
"Who are you, my dangerous friend? You know weaknesses of mine of which I am unaware."
So I guess he didn't even expect to be susceptible to garlic because he was an artificial vampire.
Right, yeah.
I mean, they had time to talk. Like, Morbius is a chatty Cathy here.
The entire episode, really.
His accent is kind of slips a little bit, eh? He's trying to add evil to his voice now a little bit more. It's like before it was all about being pain. And now it's trying to add the evil to it. And instead, he's just kind of losing the accent.
Thanks to the Recombinator, there will be many more like me. The whole world will become vampires.
So Morbius goes and mentions that his ultimate plan here is to use the neogenic recombinator. Sorry, I couldn't come up with something funnier.
I'm gonna retire that bit.
To turn everybody into vampires? Like, all of a sudden, this is his fucking plan? Like, it doesn't hold any weight.
I hate that as a plot device. Like, it happens in so many things. Hey, I'm gonna turn everybody into me. I'm like, what are you gonna eat then?
I'm reminded of The Incredibles, where he says, if everyone's special, no one is.
I'm reminded of Blade, the movie, because there's a whole thing about how the one guy wants to be turned into a vampire.
Yes, the familiars, yes. Whatever.
Yeah, but the vampires themselves are super selective about who gets to be a vampire, because if you have too many vampires, then the whole thing falls apart. The whole point is to have a small subculture.
Exactly.
Maybe Goyer did read this script and was like, that's stupid. And he like threw that in there. Has a little bit of shade.
It would have made more sense but it was his motivation to turn people into vampires that were then resistant to whatever fucking disease his people back home have. It's like, oh, I'll just turn my entire village into vampires and we're fine now.
Yeah, that could work.
It's just like a simple thing. It's like the flu.
Maybe he's trying to fine tune vampirism. He's like, oh, it makes me so strong and resilient. Maybe I don't need to cure myself completely. I just need to improve it, and then I can save all. That could be my cure.
So Blade was dropped down the smokestack, and
it's totally not Oscorp.
Oh my god!
Wink. Totally not. And Spider-Man goes and starts pulling him up, and then he's like,
Spidey's first rule of vampire hunting, never let him see you sweat.
I'm just like, what the fuck does that have to do with anything, dude? Like, who was sweating?
That was a tagline for a deodorant in the 90s, but I don't see how it applies here.
Was it Teen Spirit? It
smells like it.
It's called Dry Idea.
Dry Idea. Never let them see you sweat.
Either way, it didn't make any sense, I guess, watching it now. And it didn't make sense really in the context of the scene. Like, no one was sweating. I'm pretty sure Blade is okay with dying.
There are others like me, Morbius. You will never be safe.
Yeah, he actually, when he was getting dragged over there by Morbius, he kind of phases his death or imminent death in a very cool way. I actually thought it was one of his best points of the episode. Like, I don't care if I died. Like, all I care is that I took as many of you down as I could. All right, that's a badass way of doing it.
There's always going to be vampire hunters. Yeah, that's sweet. I was really more thrown off by the fact that apparently the webbing can punch people. He shoots the webbing and it fires Michael off of the tower.
Yeah, I think that's because he's recoiling from the fact that this is no regular webbing.
Yeah, we'll find that out later, but at the time it's really weird that he just takes it in the chest like a
push. It is weird. But I think that's what you're supposed to kind of be, you know, noticing, is that it is weird because he also starts screaming the second that this webbing touches him. Because Spidey's used his science powers to put some of that garlic powder and bacteria into his webbing, which is kind of cool.
I mean, we all love science, Spidey, let's be serious. So I guess you're right. Morbius is just gingerly lowering Blade into the tower.
Yeah, he tries to drop him into the smokestack. Blade, you know, smartly tries to grab onto the edge. He's not going without a fight. And he's just hanging by his fingertips. And you expect Morbius to do something like step on his hand and like hurt his fingers, you know, or kick his hands free to knock him into this thing. Instead, he like tenderly lifts his hand and releases it.
You need this now. And soon we're going to give you this hand.
It's oddly sensual.
It's very sweet.
And I really just question the fact that Spider-Man can go and shoot nets at the end of his webbing.
Again, with that, you're
like,
right.
It's not a spray. Like, come on.
I mean, his webs form a lot of shapes, but do they ever form bows? Because the bow on this episode, as Blade and Spider-Man chatting it up on the roof, disappointed at Spidey's garlic-infused webbing that couldn't hold Morbius. They recognize, though, that they're going to need to work together if they're going to save this city from anemia.
You've got a lot to learn, web-slinger. Okay, bye. Like,
what? That was basically it.
Like, just peels like, out.
I'll teach you. Trick number one, get a sweet motorcycle. Yeah.
See ya, nerd.
He's like,
stay alert, web-slinger! It's gonna be a long night!
I feel like it's gonna be an even longer two-parter.
Oh my god. No, this is like a six-parter at this point. I can't wait till another fun, self-contained adventure.
I feel like Hydro Man was like years ago, you know?
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Blade's compass reading is 42 degrees north, 74 degrees west. Did I look it up on Google Maps? Yes, I did. Now, that's in the middle of nowhere between New York City and Albany, New York. About 100 miles or so north of New York City and about 100 miles south of Albany. So Morbius has just flown about 100 miles north in roughly 2 minutes.
See ya.
My theory, though, is that he's on the way to Albany for some of those steamed hams I've heard so much about.
Oh, yes.
It's more of a
Albany expression.
Like, to be honest, I do like that he sort of says, saddle up, it's going to be a long night. Like, I don't know, I think that's a cool scene because he flies off the roof and he does the second jump and he peels off into the night. And Spider-Man's like, oh, I guess I got to follow him.
Oh, fuck this guy, I'm tired.
I'd have been more down with it if they had set it up that they were more on the same level, you know, that they were more on the same page now. But
Up until a few seconds ago, they were still very much enemy.
And so then Blade goes and finds that Spider-Man is a keen scientific mind, and that's it. And that's also it for this episode.
Oh shit.
Which means it's time for the final thoughts and arbitrary spider ratings, where we rank the episode using whatever idiotic metric we can come up with off the top of our heads. Yeah, so in random order, go ahead, Kevin.
Sure. I'm giving this episode one ultraviolet headlight out of a possible three. This episode disappointed on most levels. The animation is frantic, reused, and difficult to follow. I don't like Blade's voice very much. It's personal preference, but I find it bizarre. It was edited like it was done with a pair of hedge clippers, and Morbius doing this huge about face was totally weak, and I hated that especially. It's a good idea to have Peter dependent on the neogenic recombinator and then put that in peril, but there's no reason for Morbius to want to make more vampires, really. The whole thing was awkward, and like a bomb of aerosol garlic, it left a bad taste in my mouth.
Oh, shit.
Oh.
Yeah, like Kevin said, I really hate this will he, won't he back and forth about Morbius eventually becoming evil. It took way too long for this to come around, and it basically lost me. In my opinion, I would have rather Morbius be like a secret threat teased throughout these last few episodes so that multiple armed Spider-Man and Man-Spider really became the focus instead of having rehashed the same encounters like 20 times. I am a fan of Blade and vampire lore as a whole, of course being a child of the 90s, but I do think he's wasted in this situation because the villain's just so lame. I will give the episode props because we all love science Spider-Man, and when he comes through, it's awesome. So I'll give this episode 6 out of 9 iron-sucking bacteria.
Cool. And as for me, I'm going to go and give this episode 7 out of 10.5 allium genuses. I like Blade, but, you know, I'm fucking done with Morbius. That's it. Plain and simple.
Take that.
Boom.
Well, I'm still worried about this vampire threat. But I'd like to learn more about what's going to happen, maybe from the person on the pod with the deepest, most seductive voice.
Well, I don't know, but...
What's our CTA?
He's supposed to have some big scoop.
The moment all America has been waiting for.
Today's issue of the Bugle.
Brock's big scoop.
Eddie Brock's biggest scoop. Big news, too.
That's unbelievable.
Exactly how did you happen to get this?
Spider-Man and Blade team up to stop Morbius from turning Felicia and the rest of the citizens of New York into vampires.
Well, we certainly haven't had enough vampires, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, so am I. As we said off the top, check us out online. All our links are on our website, radioactivespiderpod.com. If you liked our episode, please share it with your friends, family, and any unholy blood-crazed abominations you come across.
Plasma.
And if you loved it, consider sharing it online and supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/radioactivespiderpod. Also, rating us and reviewing us on iTunes to help us get the show out there. You might even win some swag. You never know. We'll be back to you in 2 weeks with our next episode. Until then, this is Radioactive Spiderpod saying, remain a vampire until you locate your mother. Or something.
Keep swinging.
Fuck you, vampires. I don't know.
Not at all!
Not at all!
A vampire? Great. I need this like Spider-Man needs vitamins.